What's up, guys, and welcome to episode 5 of the Way of the Warrior podcast. Thanks again for all the positive support on all the previous episodes. I actually stopped and listened to some of the previous episodes just to like know what people are listening to and to try and look at how I can improve it. One thing I really realized about myself is I talk slow. I talk so slow. I actually put it up to 2x speed via either Spotify or YouTube, and I could still fully understand every word I was saying. I actually sounded like, when I went at 2x speed, there's a guy called Ali Abdul, I believe that's his name. He does a productivity channel on YouTube. I'm a huge fan. And when I put it at 2x speed, I swear to God, I sound just like him. So I'm going to make more of an effort to speak a little bit faster. Nothing crazy, because it's a podcast, and my whole ethos with this podcast was it to be a bit more relaxed. And I think if I start trying to speak really quickly, we're going to lose that whole chilled out martial art discussion vibe. But at the same time, I don't want to be like a weird sloth talking to you guys. Let me know in the comments if you think I talk too slowly. I can take it. I'll take it on the chin. So you guys are aware, if you weren't aware, both on YouTube and Spotify, and when we're on Apple Podcasts, there is the ability to listen to these things faster, to increase the playback speed. And I would recommend doing so, because the content is great, but if you guys don't have the full 45 minutes that I shoot for with this show, that's a way of speeding up. Anyway, let's not waste any more time. I decided to unleash the rage on this episode. And I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek. It's not really going to be the rage, but I am going to talk about some stuff that irritates me, that annoys me, that grinds my gears. I'm generally a very laid-back guy. I don't let stuff get to me very much anymore. It takes quite a lot to piss me off. It takes quite a lot to get me to emotionally respond to things. I really try to practice in my own life a level of stoicism. But there are things, and within the martial art world and martial art community, there are definitely things that get to me. So I took 3 categories of stuff that I'm going to talk about today. We're going to delve into them a little bit. I'm going to tell you what they are and then we'll get into it. Number one is going to be, I'm going to talk about the term McDojo. We're going to talk about what that term is, why I'm a little bit fed up of it, hearing it, and why I think a lot of people are now just throwing it around with a bit of a misunderstanding about what it actually would mean to be a McDojo, and what a lot of these schools or clubs that you're seeing, you're calling them a McDojo, but I wouldn't necessarily say they are. Maybe it's because I'm secretly a McDojo and I'm just getting all defensive about it. Number 2, we're going to talk about Bullshido. Now, this is something that's often confused with being a McDojo, but they're 2 separate things. We're going to talk about what Bullshido is, how to identify it, how to avoid it, and again, how it gets thrown around a lot of the time, and I think people don't really understand what it should be used for and what it's really meant for. And those were the first 2 things I kind of wrote that I wanted to talk about. And then I found myself getting a bit riled up because I knew I've got like strong opinions on them. And then that made me think, well, what are 5 other things that as a martial art coach or as a martial artist just annoy me in training, in class? So I'm going to do my list of just 5 things that annoy me. Personal list. And if any of my students are listening to this today and they identify it, please know I'm not talking about you. Don't, you know, you're so vain. You know, it's not that. It's not about you. I've been doing this for 20 plus years. I have ran into multiple people like this. It's just the way people are. And again, it's not necessary that it is annoying. It just annoys me. Let's start with McDojos. So for anyone who's listening that is unfamiliar with the term, I mentioned McDojos to a parent who was inquiring the other day and he burst out laughing. He thought it was such a funny thing to say. I was like, it's really not that funny. McDojo, as in McDonald's, right? McDojo is this concept that you've taken something martial arts, something pure, something awesome, and you've diluted it to a point where it's very easily packaged and scaled and distributed to masses of people purely for the intention now of making profit as opposed to teaching martial arts. some examples of what it would take to be a McDojo, these are like some of the criteria, is that there's a huge grading system with loads and loads of belts. Like every other week you're getting a new belt or a new stripe or new something, and you got to pay for all of this and pay for all these events. There's a whole slew of uniform and equipment that you can only buy from the dojo. There's no other place you can get this stuff. You must buy it through us. Effectively, what they do is they guide all the revenue to go through them, as opposed to you being able to outsource it, maybe cheaper, maybe better quality, because they want all your money. The classes are way too big for the capacity of the venue. They're just trying to get the numbers in, get in as many people. The classes are short in length. I've seen classes for 20 minutes, 30 minute sessions where you're just thinking, what are you or anyone getting out of it? Some more controversial areas is that they focus more on kids. They don't really teach adults. They don't focus on competing, so they don't have anyone who fights. They don't have anything geared towards that. They don't do or offer any form of sparring, because sparring notoriously makes people quit martial arts. I could go on and on about the qualifying criteria for a McDojo. Now, again, any of my students listening might have gone, well, you have a grading system. We wear Warrior Martial Art t-shirts when we train. Are we a McDojo? I mean, I guess it's all up for debate, really. I don't consider myself a McDojo. I mean, I wish I made McDojo kind of money. I certainly don't. So maybe I'm just a really bad McDojo. But here's what I think a lot of the issue is. I think it gets thrown around too much. I think people like to coin the term because it's simple, right? You just turn around, you say to someone, yo, they're a McDojo. And you go, oh, what's that? And you go, oh, you know, it's the rubbish martial arts school. And you're like, oh, okay, you know, explain, done. You can just throw that term around. It doesn't mean anything. I think a huge issue with it is that, let's say there's 10 criteria to being a McDojo. I don't necessarily think if a school ticks one or two of those criteria that that makes them that thing. I don't think that just because you have a grading system, you're automatically a McDojo. It might be a very valid grading system. It might be really difficult. They might only have a very small handful who ever get to black belt. And that black belt test might be really, really difficult. Now, the fact that they make a bit of money on that, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm assuming that they're giving their time, that they're booking a venue, that it takes hours upon day, that maybe there's staff to pay. Yeah, I imagine there is a cost involved in doing so. Now, obviously, you can take that way too far. You can have, like I said, hundreds of gradings. You know, it's red belt, red white belt, red yellow belt. Then you get yellow belt. Then it's yellow belt, yellow white belt, yellow black. And, you know, it goes all the way through. You're just every other belt is a belt and you're grading every 2 weeks. And within 5 years, you're a fifth degree black belt. But really, it just meant you've done a grading every couple of weeks. It's insanity. I think a lot of people just don't understand the business side of it. Not that you need to. Like, if you're training martial arts, why do you care what the overheads are or what the retention rates are or the marketing process? Doesn't mean nothing to you guys, which is fair. But I do think it's something worth taking into consideration. I did a post on Reddit a while ago and it lit up. It went quite up on the trending because I basically outlined all the probably unknown costs to people of running a martial arts school. And I did it from the point of view of someone who would be owning their own full-time venue. I actually teach mostly out of rented accommodations where I just pay for the time I use. But if you've got a full-time venue, not only are you obviously paying the rent or the mortgage on that premises, but depending on the country, there's definitely also going to be some associated tax. So here we have tax associated with having the property on top of it. They're called business rates. Then, in order to earn enough to pay the rent and the rates, you're probably going to go over something in the UK called the VAT threshold, which basically means you then got to add 20% tax, which normally gets charged to the customer. But depending on the cost of your classes, you might have to absorb some of that cost. On top of that, you've then got the utilities, the water, the gas, the electric, the Wi-Fi, which is now like a compulsory thing, the phone line. On top of that, you've got the maintenance for the building. You've got the equipment that you need to maintain and keep. You've got the cleaning that you need to do. Maybe you have staff that you need to pay. There's a lot more overheads to it than people might realize. So a lot of what these things are, like selling a couple of t-shirts, you might see it as, oh, it's a cash grab, but maybe it's them trying to just keep the lights on. Like maybe it's them just trying to make the business feasible so that they can then offer the classes. Because yeah, in an ideal world, you come to classes, you only pay for your tuition, and the instructor gets to live a nice comfortable life and you get to learn good quality martial arts. But let's say you live, I live in London. The cost of living here is very expensive. And as much as I would like to offer the cheapest martial arts classes around, I need to offer a price point where I can make a decent living off of it, because I've got a family to support, I've got people to feed, I've got to keep a roof over my head, and I want to offer a quality product. So it's hand in hand. Does that mean that sometimes I charge you to buy a t-shirt from me and take a bit of profit on that t-shirt? Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. And I won't apologize for that. I actually believe that uniform has a lot of benefits to people in the sense of how it can bring a class together, how it can generate a community. I don't get too caught up on it. Wear whatever shorts you want to wear whatever trousers you want to wear, but come with a sense of purpose and a sense of being in the right place. Don't turn up in your tracksuit bottoms to my kickboxing class. Don't do it. Come in the appropriate wear, come with the appropriate mindset in order to train. Do you even train? This is the other thing, because this McDojo term gets thrown around a lot on the internet. And when I see it, I'm just like, do you even go to a class? Like, are you even a member of a martial arts school? Do you even join a gym? Or are you just out here being a troll? Probably just being a troll. I won't go on about it too much more. Some things to look out for, because it is a thing. If it's a McDojo, you'll know it just by talking to the staff, right? If they're so hung up on the money, if it's all about the money, you're going to get that vibe from them. I've had it with people all the time where they're like, "As I haven't paid you for that, whatever it is." And I'm like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. Yeah, leave it. Gum shield. They got a gum shield off me. It was £5, $5. I was like, yep, don't worry about it. It's cool. It's on me. You know, because I'm not geared towards the money. I need to make it. I want to make it. But it's not the driving force behind what I do. I teach because I want to teach. And I'm fortunate enough to do it in a way that allows me to make a living off of it. But I'm not obsessed with it. And I try not to gear my business that way. We had the pandemic and some people supported us through the pandemic. I froze their prices for a year. I didn't need to do that. I've got enough demand that people might want to come on and pay the new prices. But my loyalty was to those who supported me. And I froze their prices as a gesture from me. Not that it was necessary, but because I wanted to do it because it felt right within my business ethics of what I was doing. I'm going on too much. Be aware of your club. Be conscious of it. That if they're doing it for ethical reasons, then you should want to support your club and keep them around. And then you've built up a nice community, and that's what it's all about at the end of the day. Let's not get too into it. It makes me feel icky even talking about it. Like, money and martial arts is already just a bit of an icky topic. That'll do. Let's talk about Bullshido. This is a lot more fun. I enjoy Bullshido. And I tell you where the issue... let's define our terms. Bullshido. Bullshido is as in bullshit, yeah? Bullshido is the idea of teaching stuff that's completely ineffective, that's completely useless, that wouldn't actually work in a real fight. The reason Bullshido gets confused... Bullshido often gets confused with McDojos, and I will blame McDojo Life. McDojo Life is an Instagram page that actually shares Bullshido. So they're called McDojo Life, but when you look at their content, what they're actually sharing is people teaching nonsense. People teaching how to defend a gun by pushing it away with one finger. People teaching you how to knock people out by using your chi. Yeah, it's all just this absolute horrendous BS. But people confuse it for a McDojo, which might be... there's a Gracie Academy I know, And they've got very expensive prices and a very expensive kit that you have to buy specifically from them. And they charge you for the gradings, and everything's very expensive, okay? Is what I'm trying to say. You would be fine in justifying them as a McDojo in the sense that they're very geared towards making loads of money. But you could not say that they teach Bushido. They teach very good martial arts, which is how they would say they justify their pricing, is if you want to get a good product, you've got to pay for it. You get what you pay for. And they don't teach Bushido. You'll get clubs that are cheap, affordable, but maybe what they're teaching is a load of nonsense. And that would be Bushido. The hard thing to do is to identify it. Other than in the extreme cases, go on McDojo Life. I really recommend following the Instagram channel. I think they have a YouTube channel too. It's hard to identify except in the extreme cases. In the extreme cases, it's very obvious because, like I said, they're doing this with their hand, they're pushing their palm out, and five guys are just falling off on the floor with some very bad acting. They're part of a cult, very obvious. But, when it's things like wrist locks or, arm bars or how to throw a jab, it can be difficult to identify who's teaching nonsense and who's not, because the hard thing about it is where do you test the knowledge? But the real test of if someone's teaching Bushido is often that they won't provide an opportunity for it to be tested under any resistance. So if you go to a kickboxing gym, a karate gym, a striking gym, but they have no one who competes and they've got no interest in allowing you or providing you the opportunity to go to tournaments, it's a good sign that what they're teaching has never been pressure tested, has never been put under the fire. You don't have to compete. I'm not saying you need to go compete, but there should be people there who do, or the coaching staff should have competed previously, and it should be, you should be able to verify that. Because then you know that what they're teaching has been put into test and is known to be effective. The hard part can often come in styles that are more self-defense driven. Krav Maga, a lot of traditional Chinese martial arts, they're geared more towards self-defense. And then it's very difficult to pressure test that because obviously you can't just go out and get into street fights and put it to the test. You can't just go out and attack people. And these styles often don't have tournaments. They don't have a system in place to test it. And they would argue, well, you can't test it anyway because it's stuff like eye gouging and biting and, ripping someone's groin out and all of this stuff. It's too dangerous to train in competition. So that stuff's really difficult, And again, I it's hard to advise people on how to clarify how effective this stuff would be because you never get to engage in it. I would say, again, the best thing you can do is look for a long lineage. Look for people who are coming from an established background and where it hasn't been diluted too fast. A simple way, right? Go to your coach, sensei, sifu, whatever you want to call them, and ask when they started. Like, when did you officially start training? And if it's like 3 years ago, that for me is an alarm bell. It's like, you got to the stage where you're teaching in 3 years, because I still sucked after 3 years with good coaching. With all due respect, I still sucked at martial arts with 3 years of training. Even with 20 years of training, there's still stuff I suck at. So, like, for me, that's alarm bells in terms of the validity of what they know and how they practice it. But again, it's a difficult thing to come terms with. What I'll say as advice for anyone who's listening to this, and if you're concerned that your club is bullshido, go elsewhere and go do some trials. And just compare. Comparison is the best way to check these things out, right? Go to another martial arts school, same style as yours, and see if their training has higher intensity, or if the stuff that you will know and were using would work there, or if it doesn't. And then go do a little bit of cross training, as in, if you're a kickboxer, go to a Muay Thai gym. If you're a karate practitioner, go do some taekwondo. If you're a wrestler, go do some judo. Now, not everything is going to translate, but some of it should, right? Some of it should be relatable. I've had people come to my club, and I've told you guys before, we have a grading system. And they'll tell me they come from Taekwondo, and they'd say, I was one belt off of a black belt when I quit. And I used to think, you know, when I first heard that from people, I was like, right, well, I'll stick you straight in with the advanced guys. Let's get you with this guy. Let's do some sparring on week one. And then I very, very, very quickly realized, right, I should probably take anything anyone tells me about their experience level with a pinch of salt, because of the huge variety in terms of ability of different people. So now when people tell me stuff like that, I'm all right, cool. Well, let's see how you go. And I put them in with beginners. I put them in at the bottom of the barrel, and I go in with very low expectations, regardless of what they say. Now, it's very quick and very obvious if they are as capable as they say they are, and I can very quickly adjust and put them where they need to be. But it's very difficult to know, right? Because things like belt systems, it's hard to, again, put validity on someone's belt. One person's black belt is another person's white belt. One person's blue belt is another person's black belt. It's hard to understand those things, so be careful with it. Cross train, go around. Really, the real important thing about this whole Bullshido nonsense anyway is, do you enjoy it? Like, do you enjoy your club? Do you enjoy your training? Do you feel like you get something out of it? Do you feel like you're improving? If the answer to those questions is yes, then really, who cares? Are you trying to convince yourself that you can go out and defend yourself in the street against anyone? Because that's just nonsense anyway, right? If someone has a knife, if someone has a gun, the best Muay Thai fighter is going to have a problem. It doesn't matter. It doesn't translate to that. Are you looking to become a UFC champion? Are you looking to become a world kickboxing champion? In which case, yes, you need to find a very specific gym that's going to be geared towards helping you achieve that goal. But if not, then find a gym where you enjoy the environment, where you enjoy the teaching, and you feel like there's progression for you, and that's as good as it needs to be. Okay, now that I'm sufficiently riled up and worked up, we can get into the meat and potatoes of today, which is going to be 5 things that annoy me. Now, I prefaced this at the start, but I will reiterate it. If you are one of my members, if you have trained with me previously, don't think, oh, he's talking about me, as in I'm trying to get you specifically to listen to this and stop doing it. I'm not, right? You do you, you be you. If I have a problem with you, I'll tell you to your face. I'm just saying this stuff as general stuff I've experienced through the years, and it makes me either roll my eyes or be like, oh, get me out of this room. Don't take it. But if you don't like the sound of it, then maybe stop doing it. If you're aware of it, if you like relate to one of these, anyone listening to this, you relate to one of these, maybe stop doing it, because maybe people aren't telling you that it's annoying. Let's go for them. Number one, this is probably, I haven't done these in order of like 1 to 5, as in which annoys me the most, but this probably is number one, is people who coast through training. People who just go through the motions. Oh man, it's just like, what's the point? Why'd you bother? Everyone's different levels, right? Everyone's got a different level of fitness. Everyone's got a different ability, but at least push. Like, what are you getting out of it by just going through the motions? And I'll tell you more specifically what drives me mad is when people are actually either quite good or quite experienced and they choose to coast. And a lot of times, for example, they'll choose to coast because they know what's coming. And I hate it. I'll give you a real good example of this, right? So people, I will often try to line up my sparring partners in the sense that I'll touch gloves with one person and I'll look around the room and I'll go, you, me and you next. Because then I just know after this one, I've got that one. And they'll go, yeah, great. And then I will just like subconsciously notice that they then either don't spar that next round to rest up for me, or they'll take a weaker partner, or even if they take someone strong, they will go easy basically to save their energy for when they fight me so they can put on a better performance. And I just think that's just such a, I don't want to swear on this podcast, so I'm not going to, but you know what word I'm going to use, a move, right? It's a weak move to do that. Push yourself, man, from start to finish. Who cares if you get beaten up in sparring because you're tired? At least you got beaten up in sparring because you're tired, not in the fight, not where it counts. And you're getting something out of the class rather than just stroking your ego by not being tired when you spar the good guys. Don't coast through your training. Push from minute one to the last minute of the class, push through. That's the way it should be. Number two is kind of related to that, because if you're coasting through training, there's probably more likelihood that you're going to be talking in training. Guys, don't talk. Don't talk in training. The occasional like bit of advice for your training partner, the occasional question to your training partner, fine. But don't talk about stuff outside of class. Don't have full-blown conversations. Don't talk at the end of the round when the timer goes off and coach is about to start explaining the next drill. That's not a time for you now to have a conversation. Like, get locked in, get dialed in, get focused for class. It drives me mad when I just hear nattering in the background, this just distinct chatter, which then you know as well, like I said, if you're chatting like that, there's just no way that you're pushing. There's no way you're working in the training session. You're just going through the motions and you just think, well, why be there? Talk after class, talk before class, but don't bring that energy into the room. We spoke about gym cancers, and that gym cancer that's the type that basically just talks through class. And the problem is they do it with every partner and they make other people like that. Other people start chit-chatting through training. And before you know it, the whole room is just like, meh. Don't do it. Don't do it. Okay, next one. This only annoys me as a coach. It doesn't annoy me personally, but as a coach where I've had to deal with this on multiple occasions, I'm like, why can't you realize this so that it doesn't become a problem for me? It's a selfish one. People who complain about getting hit hard when they hit hard. It's such a strange experience. I will spar a guy. Let's say he's new to sparring or he's coming up in it. And I'll notice that he hits hard. Now, I'm cool with it. You can hit me hard. I'm cool with it. I will tell you if I think it's too hard, especially if I'm then going to pass you on to someone else. But you know, some people have just got a tendency to hit harder than others. Maybe they're bigger, maybe they're stronger, maybe they're less experienced and haven't learned how to taper it yet. And that's something that you do have to give them a bit of time. Like, yes, you've got to tell them, but also you just have to give them a bit of time to work that out. Keep them with more experienced guys who can handle it and who will not lose their cool with them, to help them learn the levels that you're going to take things at. But it's surprising how often it's these people who then will go with someone else who hits a bit hard, get hit, and then get riled up about it. Get all, why are you hitting me like that? But, and then you, and this is what I mean about me doing it from a coach, is like, I'll walk over to a situation where it's got out like that and someone starts shouting, and I'll notice that it's this guy shouting at this guy, and I'm like, why are you moaning about that? I just sparred you and you nearly knocked my head off. This is not what I say to him, but I look at him with this confusion in my eyes, because I'm like, but you hit hard. So it's like, you must just be completely unaware of it. And this is, again, I've spoke loads on this channel before about the importance of communication with your partners, with your coaches. It's really important to be really open about stuff like this. It shouldn't be taboo to stop and tell your partner you're hitting too hard. You should do that early on so that it doesn't get to this stage where you're now actually having an argument over it. Now, I understand through years of doing this that this stuff's just going to happen. From time to time, every, you know, couple of months, someone's going to be there and someone's going to get a bit upset. This happens at all levels in all gyms. You can't get away from it. It's, you know, it's a room full of pumped up hormones and people getting all worked up. At some time, stuff's going to boil over. I'm not unfamiliar with that. But yeah, I will say that be aware of it, guys. You're probably hitting hard if people are hitting you hard. They're probably replying in kind. And if you don't like it, then temper yourself down to help temper them down and have a conversation about it. But be conscious of it. And coaches, if you've got people and you know they hit hard, make more of an effort to help them learn to temper it down. You might have to repeat it 50 times. I've got some people I'm still saying it to years down the line because it just needs reinforcing over and over and over again. What can you do? Number four, again, kind of associated to the last one, is people who don't want to spar at all. People who just hate sparring and will do everything in their power to avoid it. I get this more with kids, in all fairness, because I teach kids as well. And kids, I'm kind of like, you get a pass because you're a kid. You don't have to spar if you don't want to spar. But adults who choose to, in particular, come to like, I'm a kickboxing school. You come to kickboxing, but you don't want to kickbox against another person. I just kind of think, what are you doing this for? This probably isn't actually what you want. Like, you think it's what you want, but it's not. Maybe you need to go to a boxer size class where it's just pad work or just bag work. The reason I say this, it's not to be like, oh, you got to man up and spar. But like the analogy I'll use is like saying that, oh, I love swimming. Love swimming. Go swimming all the time. Like, oh, great. Where'd you go swimming? Oh, just in my living room. I just, you know, do the motions. I don't really like getting in the water. You'd think that person was insane, right? You'd be like, that's a ridiculous thing. Oh, I play you know, that episode with of Friends where Phoebe is teaching Joey to play guitar and he's just having to do it with the air guitar. It's funny because it's ridiculous because it doesn't work like that. And it's the same, I think, especially in striking. It's like, what, you want to learn how to kick and punch people, but you never want to kick and punch people. You want to learn how to deal with someone kicking and punching you, but you never want them to actually do it. It's just, it's a strange mentality to have. And I, you know, as a coach, I try my best to help people. And if you're unconfident with sparring, that's very normal and absolutely fine. My job as a coach is to develop your confidence, is to put you with the appropriate partners and raise you up at an appropriate level to help you develop a level of confidence in your sparring. So I've not got too much of an issue with you being unconfident, and you're not going to enjoy it at the start if you're always getting beaten up. So that's another thing. These are all acceptable. But when you're like intentionally avoiding it, that's not cool. I had one guy, I'm going to give him props. I hope he comes back to training soon. Chris, if I'm going to call him by name. Chris, if you ever listen to this, come back to training. Chris was cool. I'll tell you why Chris was cool. Chris came to me after about a year of training and he said, "As I'm terrified of sparring. I hate it, but I don't want to be. Can I book some one-on-ones so I can spar you and gain some confidence with it?" And we did, this was just before the pandemic kicked in. So we got a few of these sessions in and he made some really good progress with it. He's like, he's not the youngest guy either. I don't know how old Chris is, but we're talking like early 40s, I'd say. So he had no reason to be doing this. He's not like some young buck who's going to go and compete or anything. He was just doing it for pleasure. But he didn't like that side of him that was scared of it. He wanted to confront it. And I thought he just had such a good attitude about it in terms of his approach to it, because he understood that the best way to do it is get the most experienced guy in the room, get the coach who he knows and trusts can control himself to bring him up through the levels. So we did a bunch of one-on-ones, and just before lockdown kicked in, you know, he was feeling better about the sparring. Still not great, and he still, you know, would miss the odd sparring session, but at least I knew he was trying. And I gave him a lot of props for that. So if you are someone who like really doesn't like sparring, talk to your coach and try to work out a system or a program so that you can start finding a way to enjoy it more. Because it is the essence of what you're doing. And I think to not do it, you're doing yourself a disservice. You're really leaving out a real vital element of what it is that you're trying to learn, trying to achieve. And the last one, bad smells at training. And this is always a funny one, because if you went and smelt my gloves, you'd probably pass out. In fact, my car is basically just a van for storing sparring gear and pads and bags. And when people who don't train get in my car, like my own mother, I'll give her a lift sometimes, I'll forget to take some stuff out the back, she is literally gagging. She is like got her head out the window, she's trying not to vomit, and I am completely nose blind to that smell. It doesn't mean anything to me at all. It doesn't affect me in the slightest. And when you walk into one of our halls, especially like the next day after a training session, it's a ripe old smell. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is you arrive to class smelling of BO and we haven't even started training yet. And I kind of can guess what the mentality behind it is. I assume the mentality is, well, I'm going to training, so I'm going to get hot and sweaty, so I won't shower before, because then I'm going to have to shower twice. Yeah, you're not wrong, but it's just so inconsiderate. Like, especially grapplers can attest to this the most because you're probably under someone's armpit or in someone's groin at parts of training. And in those situations, it's like the last thing you need. It's bad enough that you're being choked under someone's arm. You don't then need to be smelling their own very personal body odor. It's a very strange and horrible experience. So, all right, don't have a full-blown shower, but please take a bit of soap and some hot water to your armpits and your crotch before training. It's not too much to ask. The other bad smell is, and this is maybe like unfair of me to say, but I'm gonna say it. It's your gas. Why did you choose to eat whatever you chose to eat before training? How did you not know that once you started bouncing and moving around, that was going to come out the other end and infect the room? Some of the smells that come out of people once they start bouncing around from their bottom half, I just think, what are you eating? Well, like, I ain't a nutritional Nazi or anything. You can eat whatever you like, but come on, man, you shouldn't smell like that at any point in the day. And just do me a favor, before you come training, don't go eating something so either exotic or so offensive to your own digestive system that you know it's going to engage a response like that, and then come to a room of hot, smelly people and start filling the room with that smell. Do us all a favor, get your nutrition under control and get your gases under control. Please, it's vile. It's not necessary. I'll extend this to bad hygiene at training in general. Guys, gals, trim your nails. Trim your toenails, trim your hand nails, and this is grapplers, strikers, all the rest of those. Please sort out the nails because they can hurt people, they can cut people, they can scratch. People who work in labouring, like you work around a lot of dust and stuff like that, and then you come straight to training, just do me a favour, go to the bathroom and rinse down your arms before you jump on the mat. Give your face a rinse before you jump on the mat because although you don't see it, you're like covered in a fine layer of cement or something, whatever it might be. Then you start sweating and then you put it on the mat and you get up off the mat and there's this weird black puddle of the dirt from your work mixed in with your sweat. And I'm going to clean the mats anyway, but do me a favor and don't drag in your work onto the mats. Can you see how riled up I'm getting? Hygiene, guys, really, here's my advice. Shower before you train, shower after you train. Quick showers, I'm not telling you to disrupt your natural oil balance in your skin, but quick showers, do everyone a favor. We would appreciate it. Wear some clean clothes. It's gross enough, you know what I mean? Like, we're punching and kicking each other in the face with our sweaty hands and feet. We're choking each other out between our armpits and our groin. Fine, it's gross enough. Let's all do each other a favor and not make it any more gross than it already needs to be. Right, I feel a lot better. I've got a lot of stuff off my chest with that one. So I really appreciate you guys tuning in to listen to it. I'm going to finish because we've got a few minutes left with a little bit of advice. We had a guy a while ago and he was really dealing with bad issues of cramping during training. So if any of you experience real issues with your leg cramping up, your any part of your body suffering from cramps, he came to me with this problem and I the first thing I always check with people, I asked him, "What's your salt intake like?" And it's funny how people's initial response to that, they're like first thing they think of is they want to tell you it's low. They think that's what you want to hear, right? And they'll go, "Oh no, it's pretty low. I don't put a lot of salt on my food." And then you surprise them when you tell them, "Yeah, that's probably the problem. Yeah, you're probably low on minerals. You're probably low on electrolytes. We sweat in our sport profusely. And what you sweat, of course you lose water, you dehydrate in that sense, but you also lose all the minerals. You lose the magnesium, the potassium, and the sodium from your system via your sweat. And a lack of these minerals can cause cramping. That's one of the side effects of being low on these minerals, especially when you're exercising. This is what basically Lucozade is and Gatorade. These electrolyte drinks are effectively sweet drinks. So they've got water in them to hydrate you. They've got sugar in them to energize you in the form of glucose. And then they've got a little bit of mineral profile in them. They've basically got some salts in them. And that's to replenish your electrolytes, which if you ever heard that, it's just really just the fancy ass word for the minerals within your body. So don't, if you regularly train, don't feel like you need to go low on salt. You'll hear fighters talk about taking the salt out of their diet when it comes to water cutting. Watch the last episode of the podcast where I talk about weight cutting and I talk about a stage in the process where you remove salt from your diet so that you can flush your system and not hold on to any water. But when you're generally in training and generally working out, you need the minerals. So put salt on your food. If you need to make salt drinks in terms of you can make your own Gatorade, guys. Get water, get some fruit juice, go 50-50 on that. So it's like half sugary drink, half water, and then just add a little sprinkle of salts. It doesn't need to be a lot, a little pinch of salts in there as well. And that's going to help you with the issue of cramping. It's also going to help you to be better hydrated because water isn't the only thing that we need to be taking on. The mineral profile is important as well. Thought I'd put that in on the end just so that we finish on a slightly lighter note and something useful for you guys rather than just hearing me rant and complain for 45 minutes. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. I hope, if nothing else, this podcast is just something you can have on in the background whilst you're at work or whilst you're doing things around the house, and I can just soothe you whilst talking to you about something that you enjoy, martial arts training, whatever your discipline or style may be. I'd really appreciate if anyone would like to give me some topics to discuss. Currently, I'm just pulling stuff out of the ether of things I think you would find interesting. But if you've got something and you want me to do a more long-form discussion on it, hit me up. Drop it down in the comments. Send us a DM via Instagram. Our link is always down in the descriptions. I believe off the top of my head that we are warrior.martial.arts on Instagram. It's very difficult to just get Warrior Martial Arts anything. Actually, anyone who owns the domain name for warriormartialarts.com, can you stop trying to sell it for £5,500? That's just extortionate. Give me a reasonable price so I can take that domain name off your hands. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening. Hit like, hit subscribe, and I will see you on the next one.